Now, leading up to this year's election, President Donald Trump skirted the question of whether he would accept its results if he were not declared the winner.
Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
People are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to have get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it. And you know who knows it better than anybody else? The Democrats know it better than anybody else. Go ahead.
That was Trump speaking back on September 23rd in the White House briefing room. Here we are. Trump was not declared the winner, and he has not accepted the results as he was foreshadowing. News media outlets have already been reporting on the negative impacts of Trump's refusal to concede to President-elect Joe Biden. Biden has not been able to receive crucial intelligence briefings. His team has not had access to federal government resources to set up a transition or get a leg up in terms of taking over managing the coronavirus pandemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think different news media outlets have been doing so far since the election was called for President-elect Biden? Have they given Trump a fair shake when it comes to him asserting legal rights to challenge? Or do you think they're overcovering unsupported and unsubstantiated claims? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Margaret Sullivan is media columnist at The Washington Post. She's been thinking a lot about the coverage of Trump's post-election actions and statements. Wrote a column recently on the topic. Margaret, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. It's nice to be with you and your listeners.
Well, can you lay out for us the challenge facing news organizations when we've got the president, the incumbent president, not recognizing the results of the election?
So the challenge is to figure out sort of how seriously to take this is, you know, and to determine in some way, like, what's going on here? Is this really an effort to, you know, is it a coup attempt? Is he going to try to, you know, undermine the election and assert that he won in a landslide, as he continues to do? Or is it kind of a game on his part that is intended to undermine the truth of what's going on as opposed to actually preventing the election results from taking effect? So, you know, it's hard to say at times. I think the President Trump does know that he lost, but, you know, he's not admitting that. And so we have to kind of figure out, we meaning the media writ large, have to figure out how to frame this, you know, whether to take it seriously or whether to do something else.
Well, there's such a wide range of actions going on, from a partial recount here in Wisconsin, which is exactly allowed under state law and is a legal option for any candidate, to wild, unsubstantiated claims of an international hacking conspiracy. I mean, is part of the story here sorting out one from the other?
I think so. And, you know, I think that the attitude of Megan Wolf, who I just heard, is a great one. You know, she said she's looking forward to proving and showing that the election was completely well carried out. And in fact, you know, given all the fears there were that this would be an election in which there would be fraud and you know, interference from foreign adversaries, it actually turned out to be a safe election and a well-carried-out election, and thankfully, I think, for the state of the democracy, not a close one, because if it were a close one, like we had in 2000, you'd be seeing a far different situation, and I think a more dangerous one happening.
There's a lot of criticism, I think, of the media sometimes for what people call both sides reporting. You know, the model might be one side says tax increases would be good, the other side says tax cuts would be good. But if it's a case where one side is claiming fraud, the other side says it isn't, what's the duty of the media in that case?
Right. I mean, I think we have to be on the side of the truth as much as we can determine it. And one of the ways that gets undermined is by equating things that don't actually deserve to be equated. You know, equating something that is provable, truthful, verifiable with something that's simply a false claim, and writing a story or broadcasting a story that says, well, this side says this and this side says this, and we leave it up to you, viewers and listeners and readers, to figure it out. I mean, that's not actually very helpful. And I mean, I think an example of this is climate change. You know, we know that climate change is happening. There's really no doubt about it. So if you write a story that says, well, there some people think there's climate change, and all these others over here say that that's just simply not true. And if you leave it like that, this kind of equal sides for unequal things, you're really not serving your audience very well.
Talking to Margaret Sullivan, media columnist at The Washington Post, talking about media coverage of the post-election period with the president not recognizing the results of the election. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are you seeing in the media that you follow? What would you like to see that you're not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. A tricky thing in the media, Margaret, is I think, you know, if we set up a statement, such and such politician said an unsubstantiated thing or made a false claim, a lot of the audience is going to hear that and say, wait a minute, that's biased against my candidate, whoever that might be. How do you allay those concerns that that media people might have, that they're just going to tick people off by saying that?
Right. I mean, I think if you can show, not tell so much, it's helpful. If you can, you know, give numbers, if you can quote credible sources by name, you know, to the extent that you can bring forth the evidence rather than saying something is baseless. And also that language gets weakened very quickly. You know, it's like unsubstantiated, baseless, whatever. It sort of starts to sound the same to our ears a lot. So I think we have to do as well as we can to, you know, get as close to the truth as we can and explain it and excavate it and put it out there. And, you know, the media can't do everything, and it doesn't do everything very well, but we can do that much, I think.
And we have two big phenomena in the media right now. There is a huge web of websites and social media platforms and elsewhere really spreading false stories, things that have been debunked a week or so ago by the other thing I'm bringing up here, fact-checking sites that have gone through and debunked claims and posted articles about it. And the false stuff, as from where I'm sitting, is spreading a lot faster than the fact-checking side of things. I don't know, how much is it the media's duty to go out and pursue the false information out there and try to level the playing field?
I mean, there's a whole system of disinformation, and it's like a fire hose of bad stuff out there. And it's, you know, fact-checking can be useful up to a point. I actually wrote a column at one point saying I wasn't sure how effective it really was. I think it's necessary without being sufficient, you know. So it's hard to chase all this stuff down. And there are so many sites and people now who are magnifying bad information. And it's going to be believed, at least by some. And I think when it's repeated ad infinitum by, you know, people right up through the president and his tweets, it's a great propaganda technique, is repetition that may have some truth to it, a grain of truth, and a lot around it that's not true, and repeat, and magnify and give it a platform. I mean, it's very troubling.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Sauk City. Mark, hi.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good. What do you want to bring up?
I guess I keep hearing on the media how they about President Trump conceding, and that we're still going through verifying the ballots, and then they keep saying that he's not accepting the results, and they said you can't accept the results until after the final counts are in. But yet they keep stabbing him in the back and saying he won't accept it. He's like, accept what? They're still checking ballots. They're still finding stuff that wasn't counted properly and machines that messed up some votes. I mean, it's the numbers aren't what he wanted, but it's you still can't accept to vote until the numbers are in, and the media keeps sitting there stabbing him in the back and saying he needs to accept.
I gotcha. Mark, thanks a lot for the call. I'll give my experience going back to 2016. I anchored our election night coverage sometime after midnight. The AP projected Wisconsin for President Trump. That put him over the edge in the Electoral College. That's when I started calling him President-elect Trump instead of Republican nominee Donald Trump. There were still counting to do. There were still legal challenges. But at that point, he was President-elect Trump, and obviously that held firm. And that's the same standard we're using now, Margaret, in 2020, I think. Is that, I don't know, it seemed, does
that's
it seem
right.
consistent?
No, I think that's right, that the votes have been counted. The states haven't all certified the votes, so it's not completely official. But we know what the vote count is. And, you know, and so in some cases, there are some recounts. As you said, two counties in Wisconsin that are undergoing recounts. It would be extremely surprising for that, and unprecedented, I think, for those recounts to materially change things. In other cases, recounts have, you know, changed a couple hundred votes or something like that at most. So the results are the results. You know, you may not like them, and the president may not like them, but we're quite sure that that's what's happened.
Thanks a lot for calling in at 800-642-1234. Margaret Sullivan is with us, media columnist at The Washington Post, talking about media coverage of the post-election period. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What media are you following? What kind of things do you like in the coverage? What do you not like? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Margaret Sullivan of The Washington Post about how the news media is covering the statements and actions of President Trump post-Election Day. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your comments and questions. Back to your calls now. Jody is with us in Monona. Jody, hello.
Hi, I actually had a couple responses to things that were said. The last caller, he failed to realize that Hillary Clinton conceded and President-elect Trump got the money and was able to start his start with his office
transition, right,
and get things going. And, the other one was I liked that your guest said, show me, don't tell me. I think they have to have a lot more talk and a lot more visually what's happening, because I don't think people have heard so much and they hear so much that it's a little bit overwhelming. And as far as covering Donald Trump, I think they should be strongly covering him golfing and hunkering down and at the White House. This is a man who wants TV time every day.
Really, Jody, I got you, Jody. You're kind of fading in and out. Thanks for the call. Margaret, your thoughts on, I mean, the president is still the president, on coverage of his actions now as president.
Right. I think, you know, we only have, in the United States of America, we only have one president at a time. And he indeed is the president, and is so therefore, you know, we need to cover what he's doing and what he's saying, but we can put it in context. We can say he's saying something that's not true. We can put it in historical context. But, you know, your caller is absolutely right that a lot of people are finding it hard to know what to believe because there's so much coming at us all the time. And I think, you know, there's mistrust and distrust in the media, and sometimes for good reason, because there's a lot out there that's not very good and not very true. And one of the reasons for that is that local journalism has suffered so much, and local journalism, you know, local newspapers, for example, have been more trusted, and they're weaker now. You know, their business model has really declined. So that's one of the underlying factors that has hurt our ability to have kind of a common basis of facts that we all deal from.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Steve now with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I want to echo something, not the previous caller, but the one prior had to say. And I will say, and this is all due respect to both of you, but both your answers were kind of disingenuous. Joe Biden said during the debate that he would not declare himself a victor until the final votes were tallied, all the canvassing, everything was done, and it was official. Those were his words. Those were his official words. So why would you hold him to a different standard than Trump? Why aren't you condemning him for saying he's president-elect when he said he would not do it until everything became official?
Thanks for the call, Steve. I don't remember the exact words in the debate, Margaret, but your thoughts on what Steve had to say.
Well, I don't remember those exact words either, but, you know, I think that we have a process in the United States that's been going on for many years, many administrations, Republican and Democratic, and it's pretty much the same every time, which is that we count the votes, we have some kind of reasonable consensus that this is the case, and when that happens, sometimes it's on election night, usually it's on election night, sometimes it's a couple days later. In the case of the 2000 election, it was weeks later, but that was a very unusual case. We're not in that situation right now. There is no real question. There is no real question at all and about what has happened with the votes. They've been counted. They are real. And so, you know, it's past the time when every other president-elect has been able to have a transition going on that allows for a peaceful and useful transfer of power. So, you know, I don't know what your sources of information are there about the votes are still in question. They're really not.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Talking to Margaret Sullivan, media columnist at The Washington Post, about coverage of the post-election period right now. Margaret, I wanted to talk to you about another column you wrote, actually, about the relationship between a president, any president, and the media. President Trump, a famously contentious relationship with the media. But in your piece, you talked about President Obama and his investigation of leaks and targeting of members of the media. What would you hope for a better working but still adversarial relationship between presidents and the media?
Right. I've been very critical of President Obama's relationship with the press as well, as you say, because the way he pursued and prosecuted journalists and was not transparent the way he promised he would be. So what I'd like to see in a Biden administration is a lot of access to legitimate news sites. I'd like to see truthfulness from the briefing room, and I'd like to see accountability. So that would be something of a return from the Trump era. And, you know, America has always been a beacon of free speech and press freedom, and that has declined very badly, especially in the past 4 years. I think we need to get back to that. That's one of the things that distinguishes the United States of America and makes us special in the world. And it's something that we want to, you know, I think, guard and cherish.
And you mentioned also earlier, Margaret, and this is something I know you've written about as well, the decline in local media, local newspapers in particular. Do you see any hope of rebuilding that?
I mean, I'm really troubled by it, as you know, and I'm sure your listeners do too. You know, for the past about 15 years, newspapers have been in a serious decline, really, because their main lifeblood for revenue, print advertising, has gone away in the internet age. I mean, that's simplifying it. There's no silver bullet on this, but I really feel like we need to shore up these institutions because they are so incredibly important to our democracy.
And as in our last minute or so, Margaret, can you give some advice to our listeners as they read whatever media they read to, I guess, be smart media customers?
Right. Well, it's really important to be able to, I think it's really important to compare and contrast. Don't just have one news source. But if you see something, you might want to check it somewhere else. I mean, that's a lot of work. It's too bad we have to do that. But I think finding news sources that you believe to be verifiable, that do legitimate kinds of work, and then sort of reading across the spectrum a little bit will help you be a good news consumer. And we all really need that right now because it's pretty confusing out there.
Margaret, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to Margaret Sullivan, media correspondent at The Washington Post. We talked to her today about how news media outlets are covering President Trump and his actions following Joe Biden being called the president-elect. Still time to share your thoughts. You can email ideas@WPR.org, and you can always tweet us at Central Time WPR.